Well, good morning again, everybody. Glad you're here. Thank you for taking the time to be here and showing an interest in spiritual things. This morning, I want to talk about something that was just mentioned in the text that Rick read for us this morning. I went looking through my archives of the last, whatever it is, 15 or 20 years of stuff that I've taught on, that I have on my computer, because I thought, well, surely I've talked about this subject before. It turns out I haven't. I couldn't find any stuff that I ever talked about on this topic before. So that means I'm not boring you by talking about the same things over and over again. And I'm probably not going to talk about this topic a lot, but I want to talk about it at least once, because this month is our suggested optional day of fasting that we suggest people follow. You don't have to do it if you don't want to. But you may be wondering, why do I talk about that at all? Why does fasting matter? Isn't that some crazy Old Testament thing or some people that those crazy people out in the wilderness do and has no role to play in the New Testament church? Well, I got news for you. It does have a role to play in the New Testament church. I'm going to prove that to you this morning. It's something that if you haven't thought about it, you need to think about it, because it is there, and it is something that Christians, I think, should be considering making a part of their lives. The reason why I want to do it this year is not only because it's this time of year, and we typically talk about it at the end of December, but also because it's about increasing our faith. Fasting can be a way to increase our faith and draw ourselves closer to God than we've been in the past. That's what we all want to do. We all want to get closer to God. And fasting can be a way to help us do that. I'm going to prove that to you from the Bible this morning. Here's a fun fact. A little font didn't come through. It had a little fun font on it. Anyway, fun fact. Did you know this? Those are all on the right list is all the passages that talk about singing in the New Testament church. And on the left is all the passages that talk about fasting by New Testament Christians. You notice the list is the same length? Did you ever notice that? Did anybody ever tell you that? Anybody ever tell you there's just as much about fasting as there is about singing in the New Testament church? If you didn't know that, does that like blow your mind? Are you stunned by that? I was kind of surprised. It's the same. There's the same number of passages on both topics. But we talk a lot about singing, but we hardly ever talk about fasting. Why don't we? Maybe we ought to. It appears to me that it's maybe just as important. Maybe we ought to be talking about it. Let's talk about some of those passages this morning and what they mean. I want to talk, first of all, though, about what fasting is and what it isn't. My definition of fasting, this is from Vance's Dictionary, it means abstaining from food and sometimes from drink for a defined period of time for a spiritual purpose. You don't have to abstain from water or drink if you don't want to, but certainly it means abstaining from food. And there are cases in the Bible where people abstain from food or people abstain from food and drink for a period of time. Obviously, people's health plays into it. Don't do something that's going to imperil your health or do something longer than is safe for you in your situation. But even just missing one meal could be fasting. If we're using that time, dedicating it to God, saying, instead of eating this meal, I'm going to take this time and pray about things instead of eating that one meal. Or it could be for 24 hours. It could be even for longer. People in the Bible fasted longer than that. But whatever works in our situation, whatever's necessary for us to draw closer to God, can be useful for spiritual purposes. Let me talk for a minute about what fasting isn't, and that's on the next slide. It's not about dieting, nutrition, or losing weight. I'm not talking about that, okay? I don't care if you're fasting for dieting or losing weight. That's not what fasting was in the Bible. People in the Bible usually worried about having not enough food rather than too much food. But it's not about any of that. It's not about forgetting to eat or being too busy to eat. That's not what it's about at all. It's not about dietary restrictions like the law and the law of Moses and unclean meats and trying to pick and choose what we eat. That's not what it's about either. And I assure you, it's not about trying to be saved by the law of Moses. That's not what I'm up here preaching this morning. I don't teach that. I don't teach that the law of Moses is part of our salvation today, because the New Testament tells us clearly that it's not. So I'm not up here telling you that we're trying to be saved by the law of Moses. Instead, I'm going to talk to you about the history in the Bible. I'm going to go back to the Old Testament and show you what fasting was in the Bible, and then show you how it continued into the New Testament, where New Testament Christians also practiced it as well as part of their devotion and service to the Lord in the New Covenant. So let's talk about that this morning. In Bible history, if you go back far enough, the word fasting or fast doesn't occur in the Pentateuch. I ran my computer check and it doesn't occur there. However, there was one day of fasting that was required of Israelites under the law of Moses. And the reason why it doesn't occur is because the law of Moses used a different phrase to describe it. It's in Leviticus 23. It's the Day of Atonement. We talked about that this morning in the Bible class, where the high priest once a year would go into the most holy place in the temple and offer that sacrifice for the sins of the people. After he cleansed of his own sins, he would then intercede for the people. And on that day, not only was the high priest doing that in the temple, but the people at home were afflicting their souls. And that phrase, afflicting your souls, is a reference to fasting. That's how they understood it, and that's the interpretation of that phrase. Moses wrote, on the 10th day of the 7th month shall be the Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls. And the reason they were afflicting or fasting was because it was an expression of sorrow for sin. This is the one day of the year when ancient Israel was especially told to be conscious of their sin and having the need to have that sin atoned for and have that sin removed so that they could be God's people and could truly be forgiven and right with God and have all those things erased and be forgiven and have everything right. And so this affliction of the soul is an expression of sorrow for sin. It's a recognition. I'm fasting because I'm expressing to God the sorrow for the sins I've committed in the past 12 months. And I want God to recognize that I'm sorry for that sin, and I want him to forgive me. And I want the nation as a whole should be fasting on that day, so that we all are expressing together in ancient Israel this sorrow for sin and call on God for forgiveness, as the high priest does in the temple. So we Israelites are also doing at home. And that's what they did. But there were other times as well when people fasted in recognition of sin, confession of sin, and calling on God, imploring him for mercy and forgiveness for the fact that we're sinners. We need his grace. Nehemiah did it when he came back from Persia, when he came to Jerusalem after hearing about how the condition of Jerusalem was in. He came back, and he saw that the people were not living the way they should. Uh-oh, got a problem? Okay. He saw that the people were not living the way they should in Jerusalem after the restoration from captivity. They were come back, but things were not going well spiritually. The people were not right. They were not living right. And so in Nehemiah chapter 9, it says, on the 24th day of this month, the children of Israel were assembled with fasting in sackcloth with dust on their heads. And those of Israel at limited lineage separated themselves from all foreigners. They stood and confessed their sins and the iniquities of their fathers. Some of the Israelite men had married heathen wives in contradiction to the law of Moses. And now they realized what a grave sin that was and how much in trouble they were with God. And so in order to express that repentance, express that sorrow for sin, they spent some time fasting about it and praying for God's help. Fasting can be a way of expressing how sorry we are for our sins in order to implore God's forgiveness that we might draw closer to him. And that's what they did. Another time when fasting was used in the Bible was during times of sickness. Many of you know the story of King David. You know that after his adultery with Bathsheba and then killed her husband and then took her to be his own wife, and all that was predicated on the fact that she had become a child because of David's sin. And so now they're trying to cover it up. Well, in the course of time, the baby is born, but the baby becomes sick. And now David is told by Nathan the prophet the baby's going to die. But David doesn't just accept that answer. He prays about it. And not only does he pray, but the Bible says in 2 Samuel 12 and verse 15, the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife bore to David and became ill. David therefore pleaded with God for the child, and David fasted and went in and lay all night on the ground. So the elders of his house arose and went to him to raise him up from the ground, but he would not, nor did he eat food with them. Then on the seventh day it came to pass that the child died. And then if you know the rest of the story, you know that after that he stopped fasting, went back and ate food as normal. But he fasted and prayed for 7 days because he was so distressed by the sickness of this child that he wanted God to change his mind and heal this child who was dying. And his prayer was denied. But you can see in his fasting how earnestly he's adding extra emphasis to that prayer to really show God how sorry he is and how earnestly he wants God to save that child. Fasting was part of that prayer during that week. In Psalm 35, the psalmist writes in verse 13, but as for me, when they were sick, and he's talking about, it's interesting context, he's talking about people who have mistreated him, some of his enemies, that he actually prayed for the healing of some of the people who don't like him when they were sick, but he prayed for them anyway. Prayed when they were sick, his clothing was sackcloth, I humbled myself with fasting, and my prayer would turn to my own heart. He actually fasted and prayed when some of people who didn't even like him were sick, asked God to heal them, which is interesting. And then you go on and read them, says now they still hated him anyway, even though he prayed for him. So anyway, fasting can be effectively used and should be used and can be used during times of sickness. It's a good time to use it. A big crisis in life. These come along, hopefully on rare occasions. It'd be nice if they never came along at all. But crisis situations pop up in our lives. In ancient Israel, sometimes Israel was invaded suddenly by a big army from outside. Usually when they weren't serving God very well, a big army would show up. Sometimes when they were serving God, God would defeat the army. Sometimes when they were in trouble with God, God would make sure that a big army showed up to punish them. But in any case, in 2 Chronicles 20, it says, "Some came and told Jehoshaphat," he's the king, "saying, a great multitude is coming against you from beyond the sea, from Syria. They are in Hazon and Tamar, which is in Gedi. And Jehoshaphat feared and set himself to seek the Lord and proclaimed a fast throughout all Judah. So Judah gathered together to ask help from the Lord. And from all the cities of Judah, they came to seek the Lord." They're in crisis. And when a crisis shows up, a sudden period of extreme danger, that's a good time to resort to fasting, because it shows God how serious we are, how desperately we need his help. And we implore him to save us from this grave time of crisis. And that's what ancient Jerusalem did in the kingdom of Judah. You may recall the story of Queen Esther. Queen Esther was a Jewish girl who married the king of Persia. And while she was married to him, a great persecution was planned by one of the king's advisors who had a grudge against the Jews. And he planned this big program of persecution, and we're going to wipe out the Jews and kill them all, not knowing that Queen Esther was Jewish. And Queen Esther has to decide what to do. And they had a rule in the Persian kingdom that nobody could go into the king's presence uninvited. You had to have an appointment. You had to be invited. You couldn't just show up and go in and say, "Hey, king, I want to talk to you." You can't do that. And Esther, upon hearing the news of this great persecution that was being planned, is told by her uncle, Mordecai, "You need to go talk to the king about this. You need to..." And her answer is, but he hasn't invited me. He hasn't called for me in a while. I can't just walk in there." And Mordecai, her uncle, persuades her, "No, you need to go talk to him. Take your chances. Just go talk to him, invited or not, because you're going to die anyway. He's going to persecute all the Jews, and hey, you're a Jew. We're all going to get killed if you don't." And so Esther says, "Go gather all the Jews who are present at Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise, and so I will go to the king, which is against the law. If I perish, I perish." She could be executed for walking in on the king uninvited. But she decided fasting was the way to get God's attention in order to ensure, or at least make it possible, that king would accept her and answer her request and save her people from extinction. And it worked. Her prayer was answered, and she was able to go in and save the people and intercede for them with the king. But it was a big crisis, and a big crisis calls for fasting. Sorrow and distress. I told you about Nehemiah a little while ago. He was a Jewish guy also working for the Persian king. And this takes place earlier than the passage I quoted earlier. This historically takes place before that. He's working for the Persian king, and he hears a message from some Jewish men who come back to Persia. Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 2, "Hanani, one of my brethren, came with men from Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. They said to me, 'The survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down. Its gates are burned with fire.' So it was when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven." When we get distressing news, when we have something terrible that happens that upsets us and causes us to be distressed in life about circumstances, maybe circumstances are beyond our control, that's a time when fasting can be appropriate, fasting and prayer, because it expresses to God that sorrow that we feel in our hearts about something that's just terrible, and we need God's help to deal with it. And that's how Nehemiah viewed it in Nehemiah chapter 1. In Matthew chapter 4, as we move into the New Testament time, but still Jesus, who lived under the Old Covenant, the story of the life of Jesus, as you will recall, begins with his birth. It, of course, begins with John the Baptist coming, and then as the forerunner, and then and you have the birth of Jesus, and you have then Jesus is baptized by John the Baptist in the Jordan River. But Jesus does not immediately begin his public ministry at that point. His baptism is not the immediate start where he then immediately goes out and starts teaching. He has to do something else first. What he has to do first is Matthew chapter 4 and verse 1, that Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, afterward he was hungry. Jesus has the most difficult job anybody's ever been given. Save mankind from sin. What's harder than that? That's the biggest job in history. And before he begins that job, he is directed by the Spirit of God. It wasn't just him deciding to do it. It was the Spirit leading him, telling him, go off in the wilderness and fast for 40 days. And so that's what he does. And that fasting in the wilderness is preparation for this great mission that he has to accomplish. And what happens during that 40 days? You put yourself in that situation. What do you do during those 40 days? You're out in the wilderness. You're not in the city going to meetings and meeting with people. You're out in the wilderness by yourself. 40 days. And not eating any food. Who do you talk to during those 40 days? You talk to God. And how do you talk to God? You talk to him as a person who's hungry and starving and totally relying on God to get you through those 40 days out there with nobody else to talk to. It's an intense commitment to God. Now, I'm not telling you that you have to go home out in the wilderness and fast for 40 days. I'm not saying that. That was a special thing that was given to Jesus for that purpose. I'm not telling you have to do that. But what I am saying is the fasting was a part of that because it deepens and strengthens our faith, deepens and strengthens commitment, and it increases reliance on God by putting ourselves into this emotional and physical state where it reminds us of our dependence upon God. That's part of what fasting is intended to accomplish. And that's what it did for Jesus as he prepares for the biggest job that's ever been given to anyone. This picture here, I'm going to update this picture a couple of times, so don't take this as the final word. This picture describes how sometimes, I know, Jeff, you've talked about it, I've talked about it. This picture describes what I don't want us to be. This is the life of perhaps the half-hearted or the uncommitted as we think about the prayer life. How do many people approach prayer? They approach it like the aviator treats a parachute. You throw it under the seat and wait until the plane's going down, and then you look under there and hope it's still there and pull it out and strap it on and jump and hope it still works. And that's how they treat God with prayer. They pray when there's a crisis. And the rest of the time, we go through life just fine. Life flows on. And then when a crisis pops up, we start praying. And then when the crisis is over, okay, good, don't need God anymore. I'll just carry on with life. And then another crisis, oh, crisis, I need God, better start praying. This is not the model to follow. Okay, this is what many people do, but it's not the right model. Right? This is not it. What I want us to think about, and again, I'm going to update these models. This is a better model here. This is better. This is not the final model, but this is an improvement. What if we prayed daily and then had fasting during times of crisis? Wouldn't that be more like the biblical model? Wouldn't that be more like it? What if we were praying every day, praying and maintaining that relationship with God, but then in times of crisis, we add to that prayer by adding some fasting to it because we're in a crisis and we need God's help more than usual. More than usual. We pray every day and then fast during extraordinary circumstances. What if we did that? Wouldn't that be more like what you see among God's people? Well, hold on. That's not the end of the chart. I'm going to come up with another chart here in a minute, an even better one than that. What about the new covenant? That all sounds great, Vance, but that was all a bunch of Old Testament people, and we don't have the law of Moses anymore. Well, I got news for you. Fasting is in the new covenant, too, and I'll start proving it to you right here. The passage Rick read a moment ago in Mark chapter 2, they are asking Jesus why he and his disciples aren't fasting like John did and his disciples. And Jesus said to them in verse 19, can the friends of the bridegroom fast while the bridegroom is with them? Bridegroom is Jesus. He's with them. He's there. He's in first century Jerusalem and Galilee. He's walking and talking with them. Should they be fasting while they're talking with Jesus? No, it's not appropriate. When will they fast? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. But the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them and they will fast in those days. They're going to fast after Jesus is gone. They don't need to fast right now while he's here. They're going to fast after Jesus is gone. Folks, when's that? That's us. bridegroom's not here. It's appropriate to fast because the bridegroom's gone. And we can fast as part of our service to him. Those days have come. In the New Covenant, in the New Testament, you keep reading, you find out the New Testament Christians fasted. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 4, "But in all things we commend ourselves as ministers of God, in much patience, in tribulations, in needs, in distresses, in stripes, in imprisonment, in tumults, in labors, in sleeplessness, in fastings." And then Paul talked about it further later in the book, 2 Corinthians 11:27. He said that he had been in weariness, in toil, sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Paul had fasting frequently in his life as part of his service to God. It wasn't just some ancient relic of the old covenant. It was part of his dedication to God to help him get through all of these trials and tribulations that he went through as an apostle of Christ, to help him overcome all those crisis situations that happened to him far more often than happened to us, perhaps. But fasting helped him get through those things. They did. New Testament church practiced fasting as a whole. For 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 5. I got the wrong title on that. My slides are messed up. Sorry about that. Well, in the book of Acts, you'll read about prayer and fasting when appointing elders. I hope I have that on the next slide. 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 5 talks about individual fasting at home. 1 Corinthians 7:5 says, "Do not deprive one another, except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." Married folks can abstain from the sexual relationship for a short time and practice fasting. Why? In order to draw closer to God, because it can help them build a better relationship with God, help rely on God. Self-deprivation for a short time helps us build our faith and build a reliance on God. And then it's not long term, it's not for a long time, just for a short time, and then come together again and then start eating again, if you will, when that period is over. My passage about fasting dropped out in the church, but it's in Acts chapter 14 or 15, the slide but got dropped out. But it talks about how they prayed with fasting when they appointed elders in every church, the book of Acts. David said it this morning, it says somewhere in the book of Acts, they prayed with fasting. They prayed with fasting before appointing elders. What's my point there? My point there is you pray with fasting before making a big decision, because appointing elders is a big decision for the church. And you pray and you have prayer and fasting before you do that, because when you have some big important thing going on, fasting can be part of that earnest prayer to help us make the right decision and help make sure that we're right with God as we're doing it. All right. There's a couple of warnings I want to throw in about bad fasting. The Bible talks about bad fasting, like the way not to do it. Let's talk about those real quick. Fasting is not a substitute for righteous living. We used to joke in college about people who went to church on Sunday morning to repent for all the things they did Saturday night. There were a lot of kids in college who did that. Fasting is not about substituting fasting to make up for the fact that I've been living a wicked lifestyle. It doesn't cover up a wicked lifestyle. In fact, Isaiah the prophet talks about fasting for strife and debate, and that scares me a little bit. But I think there are bad kinds of debate, and there are good kinds of debate, at least I hope there are. Fasting for strife, in other words, they're fasting, and meanwhile they're picking fights with everybody. They're fasting, and then what do they do? They're afflicting their souls. They're having fasting, but then they're also oppressing their neighbor, starting fights, getting in trouble, and all that going on even while they're fasting. And Isaiah the prophet says, don't do that. Come on. That's not a good fast before God. You don't fast and then carry on with a wicked lifestyle. God sees them both, by the way. He sees the fasting, but he sees that wickedness you're doing too. So cut out the wickedness and just do the fasting. And fasting is not about getting recognition from others. A minute ago in the announcements, Mike said the suggested fasting that we suggest every year and at this time of year. We're not going to take names. Nobody's going to get recognition. We're not going to put your name up on a checklist or ask if you did or not. It's totally private. It's between you and God. If you want to do it, you do it. If you don't want to do it, that's up to you. But nobody's doing it to get recognition or to get praise from others, because we don't want praise from others for doing it. It's private. It's between you and God. And leave it there. Leave it between you and God. And here's something that's important. Look what Jesus said about fasting. He said, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance. They disfigure their faces. They may appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. Yeah, they get people to recognize how holy they are for their fasting. That's their reward. They get recognition. Okay, great. Good for them. But you, when you fast, anoint your head, wash your face, so that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. Jesus promised a reward to people who fast privately. Isn't that interesting? Jesus promised a reward to people who fast. I'd like to see that. That would be really cool. All right. Now here's an updated chart. What if we followed this chart? Okay. There's our life flowing along. We have daily prayer. We're not waiting for a crisis to start praying. We're praying every day. But when a crisis happens, we respond to it with fasting and prayer. But what about sorrow for sin? What if we've made a serious, and I realize we all have flaws. We all have sins. I get that. What if we really do something terrible? What if something really bad happens in our life that we're responsible for, and we feel really bad about? What if we skipped a meal and prayed about that instead? What if we spent 24 hours not eating and praying about that instead? Wouldn't that be a really good way to approach God? That's how people in the Bible did. What if we need to increase our faith? What if we feel like we're not as close to God as we used to be, and we want to call on God to increase our faith? What if we skipped a meal and prayed instead? What if we didn't eat for 24 hours and fasted instead and spent that time praying and asking God to draw closer to Him? What if we did that? What if we prayed every day and then used fasting as occasional means of drawing closer to God and increasing our faith, either during times of crisis or other things in our lives that we need to be praying about? Wouldn't that be a better way for us to live and for us to pray? So here's my summary of what I want you to take home this morning. Fasting and faith. First of all, try it. It's not as hard as you think. You may see that in the Bible and say, whoa, I can't fast in 4 days. You don't have to. Try missing one meal. Just try it. You got nothing to lose except maybe a couple ounces of weight. You won't lose anything else. You can still drink liquids. If your blood sugar drops, drink a soda. That's what I do. But you can do it. You can miss one meal and it won't kill you. It won't kill you. You can go for 24 hours without meals if you need to. You can eat a meal right before 6 p.m. between 5 to 6, and then 24 hours, then eat dinner at 6 p.m. the next day. You only miss two meals that way, but you fasted for 24 hours. It's up to you. You make your own decision. I'm not binding any commandments on you. But think about it. If we're in any of these situations here, these are all times when fasting could be a useful part of our lives. Sorrow for sin, times of sickness, either our own or someone else's. If we're in distress because we have cares and troubles and problems that are afflicting us in life, bad news and trouble shows up in our lives. If there's a major crisis or a big decision we have to make, that's a good time for prayer and fasting. If we're in mourning because someone has died or because something bad has happened in our lives, private devotion, just to draw closer to God sometimes to do that. And that's what our suggested day is at the end of this month. And that suggested day is also about decisions we have to make. What are we going to do in this church next year? We need help from God for this church to do everything we need it to do in the coming year. And that's why we suggest it at the end of the year. Increasing our commitment, fasting amplifies prayer. Another thing that I've found is that fasting also provides a reminder to pray. During that 24-hour period, if you're doing it for that period, as you go along, you may have other things going on and you may be working on something, and your stomach starts growling a little bit. You get hungry. And you know what that does? It says, oh, I need to pray. And so you spend a few extra minutes in prayer, and then you go back to whatever you're doing, and all of a sudden, I need to pray. And it reminds you to pray because it reminds you of that dependence that you have on God. Give it a try. It's not crazy. It's in the Bible. There's just as much about fasting in the New Testament as there is about singing. New Testament Christians did it. So can we. I assure you, you will find it to be spiritually beneficial to you if you try it. Let's take a moment in prayer, and then we'll move on to the next part of our assembly.